This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 94 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and alongside me, Johnny Stuffgold.
Guys, we got a special treat for you. We are joined by a legend in the game of bodybuilding. Who are we with, Tristan?
Frank Zane, my man. Frank Zane. One of my heroes from a long way away. One of the guys that a big influence on why I started lifting weights, and a lot of big, huge influence on a lot of my friends, a lot of my family. So I'm really excited to get him on.
This guy is the origin, I believe. He's like that spark plug of the golden age of bodybuilding, shoulder to shoulder with the likes of Arnie,
yeah,
Metzger, all those guys. So Frank Zane is a wealth of knowledge, man. What he's doing with his teaching, his education, and how he's giving back. I'm really stoked to get him on and share it with you guys.
Yeah, we'll just get some insights into a lot of training advice and a lot of mindset stuff, I think, as well. Because I think that's something that does get overshadowed a little bit. The fact that to be that good, I think, mindset and the psychology of the whole sport, I think that's a huge thing. And we'll definitely have to delve into that with Frank today.
He's really big on that. He's really big on relaxed recovery, meditation. Those things are right up our alley. And he'll get to share an insight on, the modern day of bodybuilding. You don't see a lot of meditation stuff, but it'll be awesome to get a legend in the old school and see what his perspective is on a lot of these things. So I'm stoked.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm stoked as well. We'll have to hopefully maybe go to San Diego and actually get him to train us one day,
because that would
be an incredible experience. But before we get him on, thank you guys for tuning into the shows. I'm sure that you've enjoyed that first show with Dr. John DeMartini earlier in the week. And we'll continue it with another legend, someone that can bring a lot of advice. He's got a lot of world experience. And these are the guys that we really, as much as we love chatting to the younger fellas, for myself, I really, really like speaking to these guys with a lot of world experience, and guys that can really teach me about things. They've lived through the 60s, 70s, 80s, and there's some great times there. And I think the changing world of today, with a lot of different technology and a different space in terms of world leaders, I think it's great to just chat to these guys that have experienced a lot more than we have.
I think looking back, we'll look back on the week of the 24th of January and see that we've just had two guys, DeMartini and Frank, over 130 years of life experience in two shows. So that's my take-home point. And what you just said as well, I truly, truly value talking to gentlemen and women who are more experienced than me, older than me, who have lived through it. As Steve Maxwell said, has been to the other side and back. So these two guys, both are a depiction of that life experience. So I'm really excited, and I know you guys will enjoy it.
Definitely. You just can't buy time. You can't buy experience. And this is what these two guys bring to the table. So we're really excited to bring these guys to you. And let's get Frank straight on. And here is Frank Zane. Our special guest is Frank Zane. Frank is a legend of bodybuilding with his distinguished resume, including 3 times winner of Mr. Olympia, 3 times winner of Mr. America, and 1 time winner of Mr. Universe, where he defeated Arnold Schwarzenegger, making him one of only three men to ever do so. We welcome Frank Zane. Frank, welcome to the Vision Board Podcast.
Good to be here, Tristan.
Yeah, Frank, like
about my victories. Actually, I won Mr. America only once, but I did win Mr. Universe 3 times.
Really? Okay. Have to tell Wikipedia to make sure they update that for us.
I think we really got to look at Wikipedia, yes. What's in there, because yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of things that aren't up to date. But basically, my titles were Mr. America 1968, IFBB. Week later, beat Arnold Schwarzenegger for IFBB Mr. Universe 68. 1969, I won Mr. World in Belgium, IFBB. I also won Mr. International in Tijuana, Mexico that year. 1970, I won Amateur Mr. Universe NABBA in London. 72, I won Professional Mr. Universe NABBA in London. And then 77, 78, 79, I won Mr. Olympia. And that's the main major titles.
Frank, like Tristan aforementioned, your resume speaks for itself. You're a legend in the game. When we announced that we were going to have you on the Vision Board, we were getting a lot of questions from everybody back home in the United States, for me, down here in Sydney. Could you share with your fans and our listeners at home a little bit about what's going on in your world currently and what 2017 is going to bring to Frank Zane?
Well, we got a lot planned. One of the things I do is I teach people, I've been doing this since 1980, I teach people how to train with weights at my facility. So I'm going to continue doing that, but also we're running a special program June 24th and 25th for aspiring bodybuilding competitors. It's going to be a mock physique contest. It's basically a posing trainers competition and training seminar where we'll take up to 12 people and hold a make-believe contest. This is what we used to do with Arnold and Franco Colombo when we competed. We'd get together and have posing clinics. And that's what this is. It's basically to learn everything you need to know about competition, what to do, how to train, how to eat the last week. All this will be covered in detail. How to get your posing routine together, what poses look best for you, what exercises to do to develop the weaker body parts that need to come up to make you look better. That'll all be covered, and that's not being done now. So I want to focus on things that have been done that need to be done. Another thing is I'm doing a bunch of, we've done one already, 91-day Wonder Body seminars. My most recent book, which came out about 6 months ago, is called 91-day Wonder Body. And basically what it is, it tells you what to do every single day, training, what workouts to do, weights, stretching, aerobics, posing. You keep track of it in the book. It's a workout journal. It tells you how to eat as well. So by the end of the 91 days, you will look different by following the program. And that is something I think people have been asking me for something like for a long time, and this year I did it. The other thing I'm going to focus on is very personalized training with me, where I'm in direct, people have direct access to me. And I'm going to take on not too many people to do that, but basically there are people who want to be guided hand by hand through this process, and that's what I'm going to do. And it's all in the works, and if you just watch my website, frankzane.com, you'll see when it's about to happen. So there's a lot going on, blogs all the time. Special offers going on, that's what I do. So that's it.
Frank, if somebody's listening out there interested in the one-on-one and then also what you're doing with the posing and, the competition, what is it about your service, what is it about your product and what you're bringing to the table that separates yours from somebody else's out there?
I don't even know if anybody else is doing this. So that, for one thing, it's accessibility. Anybody who wants to get in touch with me can. All you have to do is email me at info@frankzane.com. And we can give you any information you need to know about it and let you know what's going on.
Frank, what do you enjoy most about coaching people now?
Well, the fact is that I had an opportunity to compete for 23 years and won just about all the major titles, and I know what it's all about, and this is the thing I've done for the past 60 years. I really know my stuff because I've done it all, experienced it all, and I think I can really help people. A lot of people are interested in going further in this game, and I'm here to help them. And while I'm still doing this, you know, it's my goal for this part of my life is to teach bodybuilding. I'm trained as a teacher. I taught public school for 13 years. And the techniques of teaching I employ when I work with people here. So that is one of my goals.
Did you struggle when you first retired from competitive bodybuilding to keep finding something? Well, obviously for you it was a natural kind of transition because you were a teacher before. But was it something that you really missed when you first gave it up?
That's a big point. I want to deal with that separately. But before I do, I want to tell you about my what I call the bodybuilding equation. And this is how I structure my workouts and actually what I do. And it says L equals E times A times R times N. That means what you learn about yourself, the feedback you get, is directly related to the effort you put into exercise, which is the E in the equation, and the exercise is weight training, aerobic stretching, and posing. A, which is attitude, which is your motivation and what you, how you spend your time thinking, what you talk about, and what you, your behavior. That's a psychological look at your you know your constitution. EAR, which is recuperation, and deals with relaxation, with sleep, with learning to elicit the relaxation response, for example, meditation. I'm into that for many, many years, and we teach that as part of our program. And then nutrition, which is a big part of it. A lot of people say, well, that's the most important thing. Actually, they're all important. I don't like to put one ahead of the other, but exercise and nutrition are probably those things paid the most attention to. We pay attention to all of them, and that gives us a complete program, a complete model of what to do. Now, in addressing your other question about was it easy for me, when I retired from competition, no, not at first. I mean, think about this. For 23 years, my motivation was to get in shape for competition. It was like that every year. I think I only missed 2 years that I didn't compete.
Yeah.
But the lifestyle is the same, and it's pretty much the same now. And so the thing is, with no competition, how would I get motivated? And that was the hard part. And so what I decided to do, in order to keep training, what I would do is I would teach people how to train by training with them. And then I opened up first in Palm Springs, Zane Haven in 1980. And then later on, Zane Experience that we do here in San Diego. And basically, people come from all over the world. And I work with in a 1, 2, 3, or 4 day format and show them what they need to do. Now we have programs that go beyond that, like the special program that we're going to do for people who want a lot of access to my information. I was able to turn my motivation around more to bodybuilding as a form of personal growth psychology, which you might call it, instead of what I would call bodybuilding as character armor. And that's a psychological division between the two different kinds of bodybuilding. The first one is we start training, and what happens is we pile layer on layer of muscle on our body. In other words, we armor ourselves to protect ourselves against fear and insecurities and other things. We develop this suit of armor, which is turns out to be the ultimate defense mechanism. And that's what all bodybuilders do to start, and a lot of bodybuilders stick with that their whole life. They're always looking to compete. It's all about the ego, about them. When you make the switch to bodybuilding as personal growth psychology, it's not about you so much anymore. It's about you applying it to what you know to help other people. And that's where I'm at right now. My whole goal is to teach it, not so much to do it. I've already done that. I still work out, sure. The focus is different. The idea is to spread the word, because there's a lot of incorrect stuff going on out there. I mean, it's just ridiculous what's happening in gyms. We're thinking about having what we call a fitness riot squad. What we do is we infiltrate gyms, okay? We send people in there at different times. We're thinking about using ex-Marines, retired Marines, because they've indicated an interest. We send them in there to see when the worst times for loudmouths and fooling around is. And then when that time happens again, we infiltrate with all the people, and we have foghorns and that, and we just make it miserable for them for about a half an hour, and then we leave with the warning, we'll be back if you don't cut this out. You got to get serious and train. That's what this gym is for, not for Facebooking and taking selfies of yourself every set and posting them on Facebook. That's not what this is about. It's about focus. It's about training. Get serious. That's. I hope it doesn't resort to that, but well, maybe it will.
Frank, could you share with us a little bit of the mindset? So Tristan and I, we interview some of our guests are high-level fighters, boxers, mixed martial artists, and what we're seeing and what we're noticing is that the difference between the guy who becomes a world champion and then the guy who we'll never hear of really isn't always a necessity of skill set. It's usually a mindset, how this fighter is going to turn it on when those lights are on. When you were competing and standing on that stage, where did that mindset originate from of being able to stand there? Were you able to look at your opponents and be like, regardless how amazing your body looked, but that confidence you brought onto the stage, one, where did that originate from? And two, how are you coaching that? And is that a big issue right now in the sport?
Well, I don't know what everybody else is doing, but basically my preparation was to focus on what was important and to get myself to believe that I had already won the title. And I learned that that's the secret of winning, is to win ahead of time. Now, I don't mean just bragging about it and being conceited and, you know, putting other people down and training with other people and being close. What I would do is, nobody knew what I was doing before competition. My greatest year of training, I remember competing, was 79, the last year I won Olympia. I had a house in Palm Springs, and I went there to train the last month before the show, because there weren't any gyms there. And that gym was, that house was actually a gym. And all day long I worked out, I got sun, I meditated, I ran at the track at night, and I got in incredible shape. The whole time I was there, I said my affirmation or my mantra to myself. And basically I got to the point where nothing else existed in my mind except that. Because I discovered that when I was maybe, let's say, sunbathing, getting some color, I'd be thinking about, I just letting my mind wander. Inevitably, it would go to questions like, well, what if so-and-so looks like that? And what if this guy does that? And then I realized that that's not what it was about at all. It didn't matter what anybody else is doing. It's what I did. And so I did what I needed to do to assure myself of winning. And when I went in there, I knew I was the winner. It was the hardest in 77 because I hadn't won it yet. In 78, it was easier. In 79, it was very easy. And as far as the other competitors, looking at them, I don't know. I never looked at them. When I went to competition, I did not look at anybody. I acted like they weren't there. Now, I know some people don't like me for that. But I was there to win, not to make friends. You know, I wasn't in the lineup looking back and forth, you know, showing how nervous I was. I was basically at peace, knowing I was the best I could possibly be. I was totally confident. I had total faith, which means total certainty in my victory. Nothing could shake me. And that's why I won.
Frank, you just spoke about, you know, being down there in Palm Springs training every day. Can you just give us a little insight into how the typical day went from, like, when you actually lifted weights and were you doing body part splits and then were you doing any cardio? Can you just give us a bit of insights for us that's never done it before?
The way I trained for the show is I would train 3 days in a row and rest the fourth day. And the workouts were basically pulling muscles the first day, legs the second day, pushing muscles the third day. And I did, you know, worked up in weight on sets. I trained relatively heavy. And I got in great shape. I ran at night. I ran a mile and a half around the high school track, and my legs got really, really good from doing that. And, you know, it was regular. I think the main secret to my success is I've stuck with it. I have a great deal of perseverance. When I do something, if I like it, I do it forever. I don't give up. I mean, I'm probably one of the few people that's still training after 60 years. You know, A lot of people have used bodybuilding as a means to an end. Not me. This, for me, is it. This is it. This is what I do. I'm not going in. So that's how it was.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Frank, there's certain sports that, as the decades pass, the modern-day players will hold a reverence to the guys that came before them. In regards to the art of bodybuilding, your craft, one that you dominated, is this the case in the realm? Like, do you see a reverence in this modern-day bodybuilder? And if so, or if not, how do you think that the state of bodybuilding will evolve?
I don't see any reverence, and I haven't. I mean, but then at the other time, basically, I'm not really interested in being revered so much. I don't want to be worshipped. I don't want to go to these dinners where people give you an award and you have a plaque. I don't really want that. I don't want to be acknowledged that much. I'm content with just putting out what I do in my educational methods, have people read them and benefit from them. As far as being honored, I don't really care so much about that. It's I guess one reason is one way show promoters get you to come to their show without paying you a fee is to give you an award. Yeah. I've had many offers like that. I just don't accept them. Mainly because I don't want the award. The second way is, you know, if I'm going to go there, it's for me, it's work. You know, I mean, I'm just being honest. For me to go there and talk to people and explain and teach, I mean, that's work. I get paid for that. Mm. And so, you know, as far as respect and everything, I think the people who your fans really always have done that. And I know if anybody comes out against me, that people are saying things for me, you know, and so it's there, but it's not the main thing. You know, you don't do this because you're doing it for what people are going to think of you, although that's maybe in the back of my mind sometimes. I want to do the right thing. But you do it because you love it. That's the main reason why I continue to do this, is why I really like to do this.
Frank, I read online the other day just your entry into the sport of bodybuilding, that you used to, when you were younger, go to Boy Scout camp and you had to hitchhike 20 miles with weights to get home. Is that true?
Yeah. I didn't have weights at home. Actually, I trained with one dumbbell at the camp. I had a whole routine I did just with one adjustable dumbbell that went up to 55. And when I hitchhiked home on the weekends, I'd put those in a pillowcase and take them with me so I could work out at home. And it wasn't like I was carrying them all the way, you know, I was standing with my thumb out until I got a ride, so it wasn't that bad.
We were recently talking to a really popular strength and conditioning coach, Charles Poliquin, and he was telling us that in the 70s, now, it was like taboo to almost go to a weight room, or maybe there wasn't even many of them around to even weight train. How did you start that, and was this ever the case? Did you ever find that you and your guys were like the outcasts because you liked bodybuilding?
Well, you know, for people who didn't know what bodybuilding is or understand about it, yeah, we were, but, you know, we understood that. We weren't doing it for that reason, to be accepted by everybody, because we weren't. And the 70s were actually the golden age of bodybuilding. That's when everything good happened for me. That whole decade was great. You know, and it's also during the 70s that bodybuilders were able to start making a living being a bodybuilder, doing seminars. We started doing seminars. You know, we'd go somewhere, and ideally you would do a posing exhibition and a seminar the next day, and you make some money doing that. But I didn't do posing exhibitions all year because I wasn't really ready to do that all year. I was only ready the 3 months before to look good enough to do that. And then I didn't want to go anywhere because I wanted to train. So I didn't do much of those. Afterwards, yes. But, you know, I mean, I think it gradually came around with the Pumping Iron movie. That showed a lot of people what bodybuilding was all about. But, you know, in the words of one of the head men at Simon & Schuster, I was talking to him because we had a couple books with them. He said, you know, we thought that bodybuilding was going to go mainstream after 1975, but it never did. Never did. I mean, it actually went downhill after that. We had coverage by the networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, and then cable. And now it's just bodybuilding.com does a live feed for it. And that's the coverage. It's really popular with more people doing it, I think. But as far as the general public, I think there's a lot of them think it's freaky when they see these bodybuilding shows where, you know, guys are muscular and weighing almost 300 pounds at 5'8". You know, that they're not prepared for that.
Yeah,
that's what we have.
Is that the what do you think the reason is then? Like the big change in the public, the masses' perception of the sport from your day, the golden era, to modern day? Was it the body size? Is it because that the average person watching, like you just said, isn't used to it? What's your opinion on it? And do you think that it will ever be in the mainstream again? Like that energy you guys brought to the table, do you think it'll ever get back there?
Well, they're trying, the organizations that organize the shows, basically, because it sort of has come down to two categories. One I call the freaky muscle shows, where, you know, you just judged on how much muscle you have. Now, I don't disrespect these guys by any means. I actually look up to them because that's a lot of work and it's a lot of sacrifice doing what they did. I did it years ago, but, you know, it's different now than it is before. I mean, then you have the other part of it, the Bermuda Shorts competitions. In order to make more people go into bodybuilding, I guess, and also for organizations that sponsor shows to make a lot more money, they have a contest where don't even look at your legs, where people wear Bermuda shorts down to their knees and, you know, don't have to train their calves.
Yeah.
They all come out and they twirl around and they have abs and they're oiled up and they have a nice smile. And the ones with the nicest smile and best abs win, I guess, I don't know. But you're getting like a thousand of these guys in a contest. It has got to the point where it's, I don't know, it's not bodybuilding anymore. To me, neither one of those extremes is bodybuilding. Freaking muscle show? People don't want to look like that, the majority of them. Yeah, the buffs do. If they want to do that, they're free to do it. And then there's the Bermuda Shorts guys, which are all the guys in the gym. They're taking selfies and posting on Facebook and all that. Half a body, if that, and not much muscle, and that's not bodybuilding either. So we have bodybuilding going two different directions. And so that brings us to the institution of classic bodybuilding competition. So now it's like no more freaky muscles. You're not wearing Bermuda shorts. You're going to wear bathing suits. That's a little bit briefer than that, but it's like something you go swimming in, not bodybuilding trunks like we used to wear when we competed.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're trying, and I think, you know, they're moving in the right direction. There's a competition now in I don't even know the name of the organization. It's in October in Baltimore, Maryland, the Mr. America contest. Hopes to attract a lot of people. And so people are trying to make it more acceptable to the public. And I think, you know, there's a lot there that it should be made more acceptable to the public, because bodybuilding can do more for you than anything else. You know, it's like a Western yoga. But how do you change the way you look, the way your body is built, the way the muscles develop? How do you do that with yoga or with any of those other forms of physical culture? You can't. You can do it with weights, with weight training. With the science that we have developed, with our learned bodybuilding equation, you can pretty much do it all. And I think when people recognize that about bodybuilding, it will get a bandwagon of people jumping on. You know, that's the way it is for me. And that's what we teach here.
Yeah. Frank, I just want to get your opinion on just something that me and Johnny have been seeing a lot just in our local gym in Sydney. It has a lot to do with body image and young guys who are in great shape, who constantly look at themselves in the mirror, and you get the impression that despite they're in great shape, that they never think that they're good enough. So I just wanted to get your opinion on, obviously, because you've been at the top of the game and you've been around with so many great bodybuilders as well. Did you ever see people suffer that? Maybe you suffered that yourself, and maybe if you could offer us a piece of advice on how you kind of overcame that, or any of your friends overcame that.
I never overcame it. I never thought I was good enough when I was competing. that's what drove me to keep doing it. If I would have thought I was good enough, I would have stopped. And said, okay. I mean, I feel like now that I am.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's the point. It's all about perspective from where you're at when you're doing it. While I was doing this, I would have photo sessions with some of the best people around. Artie Zeller, for example, best outdoor photographer ever. I'd get some shots with him, and I'd see him, and they look good, you know. Everybody says they look great. I look at them, and I think, man, I still got so much work to do. Look at that part. Look at that. You know, look at this, look at that. And just, it was never good enough. And I kept training it to make it better and better and better. Now when I look at those photos, I'm in awe, sort of, because I think, how did I ever get to look like that? It's different now. You know, when you're small, everything looks big. When you're big, everything looks small. Go back to your childhood thing, where place where you used to play baseball, and see how small that is. You know, I mean, I've been involved in stuff like that. It's the same with bodybuilding. It's perspective. It changes according to who the observer is. So use that. I did, you know. Use it to keep going. I guess, you know, and what I realized at the end, I have to learn to be satisfied with not ever being satisfied.
Yeah, Frank, so with the satisfaction part, Tristan and I, we like talking about, you know, I call it an invisible tool belt, basically personality traits that we all have that allow the successful people to be successful. Maybe it's a work ethic, maybe it's perseverance. A lot of times these things that are instilled in us, not many people know about them because we keep them to ourselves. Frank, what are those things that you carry with you on a daily basis that continually allow you to keep changing and evolving?
Well, I meditate a lot. I meditate every morning for at least an hour. And then I have another session later in the day, and I do something also called high-tech meditation with devices. It's sort of like, you know, you can build your body doing push-ups and chin-ups and one-legged squats and all that, but it's not easy, and it's not fun. You can meditate with nothing. Basically, you can say a mantra to yourself, you can focus on your breathing, you can count your breaths and all that. It works. It's not easy. You can learn to do it, but to continue doing it, that's the challenging part. Just like you can learn to work out, but to continue being motivated, to continue doing is what it's going to take to succeed. You have to have continuity. Whatever gives you that, that's what you do. And my meditation gives it. Basically what I do is I clear my mind. What happens when you clear your mind? It's like creating a vacuum. What happens when you create a vacuum and then you open it up? Everything rushes in to fill it. So by meditating, I clear my mind, and then when it gradually opens up, nothing but creative stuff pours in. And I'm inspired by what I've come up with in my meditation. And I use that in writing, in my training, in my daily life. I get insight into things and events, and it helps me go forward. So that's what works for me.
Yeah, the meditation aspect, like you just said, I find it really difficult to do a traditional meditation, silence, being still, but I quite often frequent the local, we have a float center, getting in the isolation tank, sensory deprivation. Have you done this?
I might have been one of the pioneers with that in the 1980s. When we were in Palm Springs, I had two flotation tanks. And I logged well over 1,000 hours floating.
Wow.
I float every day for at least an hour.
Wow.
And I had a tremendous experience. And one realization I came to, and this happens in meditation too, although not as deep, I think floating is one of the deepest ways that you can evoke relaxation response in your system. What would happen is this, is that I'd be laying in there, and after you get used to the environment of nothing happening, in the salt water, which is the same temperature as your body, 94 degrees, actually, your skin temperature. The salt stings a little bit. You're floating near the top of the water with no sensory input coming in. After you get used to all that, what happens is you basically go deeper and deeper, and your body disappears after about 5 minutes. But your awareness does not disappear. You have now become consciousness without a body. Now, after being in there, and things actually, a lot of tension would be released. I'd go through unstressing, where your body sort of convulses, releases tension. At the end of that 1 hour float, as I came out of the tank, I felt much lighter. And I realized what had happened is in that tank, I had dissolved my body of negativity. Over time, if we do not have enough time or patience to pay attention and completely process everything that happens to us as it happens. And what tends to happen is we develop a backlog of partially processed information that's stored in our body, our muscles and our joints. Now, if we don't meditate, if we don't do deep relaxation techniques like floating was one of the ultimate techniques, if we don't do that, that builds and builds and builds. We get tension and tense muscles, and it affects our outlook and everything else. But when you can dissolve that body of negativity, I found that one float a week will do that. One float a week.
Yeah, I do it. I'm going to do it tomorrow. I usually go Sunday mornings, and Tristan's been in the tank too. So you said you've got over 1,000. That's amazing. I'm about 50. And what I'm trying to do is develop a little step-by-step, basically making my float more efficient everywhere from like showering before I get to the float center to save time to, writing about how like, you know, the earplugs. I remember my first 10 floats. It sounds simple and elementary, but the earplugs would mess with me. Were there any little tips that you developed as you would go into the tank, anywhere from breathing or little techniques that worked for you that would allow you to get into that quick, deep meditation quicker?
One thing is wear a condom if you're a guy.
In the tank?
Yeah.
Wow.
Why do you think?
I mean, yeah, because sometimes I wear swimmers and sometimes I'll go naked because it's a public tank. But teach me. Let's hear it.
What happens if you get really, 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 really relaxed?
Yeah, it's very aroused. There are heightened levels of arousal in that tank that are like completely not sexual.
Well, the thing is, and that's another thing about that tank. You know, this is my private tank, but if somebody's swimming in there all the time, I mean, you don't know what's happening in there. You know, I mean, it's disinfected and all that, but it's not that sanitary. The other thing is, every year you have to dump that salt water. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Where do you dump 1,000 gallons of, or maybe, I don't know, 5, whatever it's in there. Where do you dump all that water?
Yeah.
Good shit. And the problem with floating, this is why I stopped, is maintenance. That thing is a lot of maintenance, a lot of work. It's its own system of weather, keeping that temperature right. Good luck with that.
Yeah, so you're talking like having it in your house.
Wherever, you know, if you have a center, that's probably the best way, where they just do nothing but maintain those. You have to. If you just have a single tank in your house, you're going to have some issues with it. You know, keeping the temperature right, the condensation, you know, with the salt
the
water.
The ceiling.
You have wallpaper in there, it'll peel the wallpaper. All kinds of stuff.
Hmm.
I went to a dry tank, basically. I had a tank, and then I put a waterbed mattress in there and with the sheepskin on it. It wasn't the same, but it was still, you know, along those lines. And also with that, we were able to use the light sound machines. This is what we use.
Wow.
What we call mind-muscle meditation machines, where they emit pulsating lights that give you entrainment at different frequencies and, you know, sounds that match that. And they're very, very effective for altering consciousness.
What is that called?
We call it mind-muscle meditation machine. It's at my website, frankzane.com. You'll see there's one we call it the mind-muscle meditation machine. And I've been using these for years and years, ever since they came out, and I still do.
Frank.
Guys, we hope you're enjoying the episode with Frank Zane. We're sure that you also enjoy episodes with Dr. John Berardi, Charles Poliquin, Joe DeFranco, Elliot Hulse, AJ Roberts, and Steve Weatherford. So check those out, share it with your family and friends, and remember to please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Now back to the show. Frank, do you think that was your main source of competitive advantage with such a cutthroat sort of competition between the guys? The fact that you could relax away from training and away from shows, do you think that was your main competitive advantage?
Well, it was one of them. Yeah, I never got caught up with that. You know, the thing is, I never used other people or situations for my motivation. I wanted it all to come out of me. I mean, I wanted my intent to be strong enough to be able to do that, and it was. For those 3 years, I won. Now, you know, actually, after that, I wanted to win it another time, and three times I didn't win it, so I retired after that because I was already 41, and I felt that was my best. You know, I've done my best, and that's what was important. But yeah, you know, it all mattered, and I always tried to cover my bases as much as possible from every angle.
How long did you and Arnie train side by side together for?
Well, we trained together in 69 when I first came to California for pretty much the whole summer and into autumn. 1970, same thing. 71, I was in South Africa on tour. 72, we trained together. And then sort of every now and then after that. But, you know, there's some good solid years there. He was really very focused for training. I was very impressed by his mindset for training. He was really very motivated. He was a very strong competitor.
You mentioned mindset and you learning mindset from Arnold. What do you think was the main sort of things that Arnold picked up from you?
Algebra. what else? Well, I helped him with his math when he was going to college. We basically helped each other a lot. You know, the fact that we were in contests against each other, that was only like one day of the year, the rest of the time we were training. We were pretty much, I mean, I was at least had this idea. I was just enjoying the contact and the experience of meeting all these people, although I look back and I realize that I've pretty much met, trained, and competed with almost everybody that was popular at the time. So it was a tremendous experience and opportunity, but I just loved the experience of doing it, you know, the training, having that camaraderie going. The gym, I mean, Gold's Gym in the late 60s, early 70s was fantastic before it started changing, you know, and it was just wonderful. So I relished that.
Do you ever look back now and have a look at your training style from the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, and do you ever think to yourself, why did we ever do that? Do you look at things now and say, well, obviously with technology changing and you learning differently every year, even someone like yourself, is there anything that comes to mind that points out to something that you used to do that you would never do anymore?
Well, you know, everything probably. Not train so heavy. Not get big. The way I feel now, if I would have avoided doing the things I did, I don't think I would have won the Mr. Olympia, let alone Universe or any of those other ones. But I did what was necessary to do. I mean, everybody trained heavy, and I did, and I got injured doing it. And now I have a lot of injuries, and, I'm not in pain all the time, but, you know, I have things I have to attend to, and it was all basically derived from early training errors, going too heavy too soon. I mean, I was training with professional bodybuilders while I was teaching school full-time. I mean, Arnold, Dave Draper, these guys didn't work. They were at the gym training all the time in the 70s. Not me. I was training before school or after school or whenever. The summer was great because I had off, and that's when I got in shape for competition. But it wasn't like that the whole year. It was, you know, trying to keep up during the year and then going all out in the summer. And sometimes it was going too heavy too soon in the summer with these other guys that are already up there, and I wasn't.
Frank, we have Tristan and I like asking questions to kind of get in the headspace of how our guests think. So one that I like asking is, Frank, so if let's paint a picture, some of your closest friends are, you know, sitting around this table with Tristan and I, and you're not in the room, what would maybe three of your closest friends, what are some of the things they would say about you?
I have no idea. I hope it's good stuff, but I really don't know. I'm not out there trying to make them think of good stuff for me. I mean, it depends on who the people are. My wife would say good things about me, I'm sure. My mother, if she was still alive, would brag ceaselessly about me. My brother, he would say great things about me. Other people, I don't know what they would say. Somebody told me what Mike Mentzer said about me, which was a couple things. One was, I remember this was precious. After the 79 Olympia, we were at the banquet, and Mike came over to my table and congratulated me, and he said to me these cryptic words, "It's not your fault, that you won. I still don't know what he meant, but that was interesting. And then I had a client that came to my program here, and he said, "You know what Mike Mentzer said about you?" I was thinking, "Oh my God." When asked about what he thought about me, he said, "He's as good as it gets." So I thought it was, you know, great for somebody to say that about me, a competitor. I think what he meant was basically I covered all the bases when I competed, and I did. You know, I didn't leave anything to chance. I knew that competing against him, I would have an edge because I had way more experience than he did. And I could pose better. I know that. And it turned out just like that. So I think maybe they may say I'm perseverant and studious. They might say that. But I don't know what else.
Thank you for sharing that with us. We appreciate you letting us into that little framework of yours.
They might say he knows a lot about nutrition, and I would say you're right, because I've been studying nutrition my whole life. I have this nickname, the chemist. Basically, it's because of the substances that I use, not drugs, but basically food supplements, amino acids, vitamins, and minerals. And I have a product right now, the Super Nutrition Kit, which is what I use. It's an egg white protein fortified with glutamine and the free form amino acids, vitamin, minerals, and enzymes, which is basic package for anybody to take. It's at frankzane.com.
Yep.
It's what I use, along with a lot of other stuff that I've used over the years. And I think that my knowledge of nutrition application of it has been one of my ways of being successful, because I've been taking amino acids in free form ever since the late 1960s without let up, in good amounts too. And I think it's done more to serve me than almost anything else.
Actually, just to get your opinion on supplements, actually, Frank, we might as well just continue the discussion. What are the supplements that you feel do work, and which ones do you think that the listeners out there should avoid?
I get a lot of, not a lot, but I get some people asking me about creatine. I think creatine is worthless. I think it's cheap, so if you want, it's something if you want to spend money on, you won't waste too much money. But basically, creatine is one of the ingredients in the Krebs energy cycle, where your body converts sugar, glucose, blood sugar, into energy, into ATP. If you're looking for more energy by ATP conversion, the best thing to do is to take ATP. You can take it. I take them every day. I feel great from it. Don't waste your money on creatine. Another one you should take is glutamine instead of taking creatine. Glutamine is a fantastic amino acid that basically increases alertness, builds immunity, settles upset stomachs, does a lot of really good stuff. Things like that are much more valuable than things like creatine. So the other thing is eating a lot of carbohydrates after your workout, these glycogen boosters. I mean, some people, I guess, can do that, but I never did any of that stuff. For example, one of the concepts, you have a 45-minute window after your workout to eat, and if you don't, you miss that opportunity. Your nutrient timing goes afoul. I think that it depends more about on how hard you train. If you train really hard, you have a much longer time than 1 hour to eat. I can't eat an hour after I work out. My stomach, my blood's still in the muscles. I want to let that blood go down. Let that circulation go down before I start putting food in my stomach. So it's a good 2 hours after I eat. And so, for example, if you train really hard, go to failure on everything, which I don't do, you have maybe up to 8 hours for that window. So it's little things like this. And you know, I look at a lot of these ideas come out, and I say, you know, I never did that, yet I won top titles. Why do you have to do that if it's so good? You don't. So I take issue with some of those things, but those are just a few.
Frank, what's your opinion on diet styles like this, how it fits your macros and all that sort of stuff? Has that come up much in your space?
I don't understand the question. Say it again.
Have you, in your space back in America now, well, in Australia, there's a bit of a craze where it's, if it fits your macros. So what they're saying is, for people chasing aesthetics, it's like calorie surplus, calorie calorie minuses, but the fact of the matter is they feel that they can pretty much eat everything as long as they're going into this surplus, or, you know, if they want to put on weight, the opposite.
Well, tracking your carbs, fats, and proteins to a specific number to what you're weighing.
Yeah, so a lot of them have been adding things like burgers and, you know,
donuts,
fast food, and just, you know, unprocessed foods, which, you know, I don't like promoting to my clients, because for me, if someone's going to put something in their mouth, I want something that's, you know, full of nutrients and something that that could benefit them away from their training. So I just wanted to get your opinion if that is something that you've seen in America, and if it is, what you think about that.
Well, you know, I have this vintage 2003 Thunderbird. It's like almost 300 horsepower, and it needs premium fuel. Somebody told me one time, you don't need to have premium that, I run on regular, and I did, and I had a problem with the ignition system, the fuel igniters. So I had problems, and that's the whole point, is why do that? I mean, your body's a temple. Why do you put junk food in there? You should be able to get everything you need in your diet, basically from good foods and supplements, for example. The program I always followed is, now this is what I do, and this used to be more later on, years ago when I was competing. I get 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. And so for me, I weigh about 170 now, which is lighter. I like being lighter as I get older. It's 170 grams of protein. Carbs, what I do for 3 days in a row, I keep my carbs equal to half of that. And then on the fourth day, I match the carbs to the protein. I always keep my fats at around 20-25% by not eating much in the way of pure fats. And that's how I do it. Now, when I was competing, I would get maybe 250 grams of protein, and even less carbohydrates, because that low-carb diet was always good for helping me lose excess body fat. And I get all my food sources from whole foods, natural foods, prepared in a way that is, you know, the most easily digested. Take supplements in the right way before, usually amino acids on a relatively empty stomach, followed by a bit of carbohydrate. Just following all the rules of good nutrition, which means clean up the diet. You can't eat fast foods, junk foods, and expect to get in shape unless you're taking every drug in the book. Some of these people in competition are so jacked up on everything, they can eat hot dogs and, you know, and mashed potatoes all day long. And some of them do and get in great shape. You know, I mean, I don't know what their medicine chest looks like, but that seems to be possible when somebody overloads on that other, you know, the extreme end like that. But I don't think it's a good idea. I would never do it.
Frank, thank you so much for your time today. Just to finish, we've got a couple of personality questions that we ask every guest on the Vision Board podcast. So the first question is, so it's a bit of a double question where we take you back to your childhood and then back to your present now. So the first question is, now Frank Zane, when you were growing up, what were the posters on your childhood bedroom wall?
I didn't have any posters on my wall.
Fair point. Yeah, no, we get all the time from, maybe we're interviewing a CEO, some guys say, it's interesting, some people put Playboy mates on their walls. One of the guys we had the classics, like Beethoven on his walls. And you can never decipher who has what. It's pretty interesting. The last one, Frank Zane, you're having a dinner party.
Wait, let me get back to that question. It wasn't posters for me, it was trophy collection. I wanted to see how many trophies I could get. Okay?
Yeah.
And I remember one year I won about 20 trophies. I was in 64, I was going and everything. One show I won 6 trophies. It was just mounting more and more trophies. It got to the point where I had like 150 trophies. They would follow me around, and I said, and then I finally won Mr. World Trophy. The thing weighed 250 pounds. It was marble. I had to leave it in Belgium.
Whoa.
I thought at that point,
wow,
this is about the size of my ego right now. At that point, I had a realization, and I gave all the trophies away.
Yeah, so the second one, it's a private dinner party. So Frank Zane, you're hosting. You can invite 5 people. They could be anyone dead or alive, but they can't be any family or friends. Who is Frank Zane inviting to his private dinner party?
My parents. The Buddha. Nietzsche. Barack Obama. Is that five?
That's five.
That's five.
And then also, could you also give our fans and your fans listening one more time where they could keep following you at, where they could find information on your one-on-one coaching and your new book?
My website, frankzane.com. It's all there, and it's constantly being upgraded. And I have a wonderful team now, and we're getting it done. So keep watching. There's a lot of good stuff happening this year.
Well, Frank, we really appreciate your time, and we wish you the best for 2017, and hopefully we can get you back on again, because we love sharing this space with you.
Yeah, man, we really appreciate you, Frank Zane.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.
Guys, we hope you enjoyed that as much as we did. Bringing on Frank Zane was definitely something on my bucket list, and I know it was for Johnny as well. So guys, if you could, please share that with your family and friends, and remember to subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.
Guys, we really appreciate you guys continually sticking and supporting us. Keep pushing us. We'll keep pushing you, providing awesome content and value. Please subscribe to the show, like Tristan said, the Vision Board Podcast, and support us on social, Johnny Stofko and Tristan Cannell.
Awesome. Well, guys, just remember we've got the new wrap-up show on Friday. The first show was around 40 minutes. That's not going to be the usual take on our shows. That was just an introductory episode. Most of the Friday shows will kind of be between that 10 and 20 minute mark. So something nice and quick. We're going to wrap up the week and just bring you some value bombs, really. So it's all about kind of being very, very efficient on that Friday and just letting us speak on that Friday. So guys, tune in. Anyone that you want to kind of hear from, just send us a quick message. info@thevisionboardpodcast.com.
Get involved, guys.
Johnny, we will see you on Friday, my
man. Yes, sir, man. Have a good day, guys. Peace.